Thank you for joining us on this episode of Eminent Teachnology with Dr. Rochelle Newton and Drew Stennett, where we examine current and emerging technologies through the lens of diversity and equality.
All right. So hello, everybody, and welcome to a new episode of Eminent Teachnology with Dr. Rochelle Newton and me, Drew Stennett. Today, we're going to be talking about Moore's Law, which is Rochelle, I hope you don't mind that I had to Wikipedia the answer for this.
That's how young you are.
Yes. I had like this vague idea of like, oh, yeah. Moore's Law means computers always getting faster. And then I was like, no, Drew, it's CPUs are always doubling. And then I was like, wait, let me look at the definition. And I was like, okay, the definition is the number of transistors in a dense integrated circuit are doubling every 2 years. That was not from memory. That's from my little note here. I think sort of like and it was made by some dude named Moore who was working on this stuff. And I thought it was interesting that it was just an observation he made. Like every couple of years, it looks like the density of these boards is doubling. And he thinks that it will continue to happen for quite a while. And it looks like, judging based on the charts I saw, it has happened. And like, it may be leveling out a bit, but still roughly every 2 years, the density of these boards doubles.
Absolutely. He was right. And a lot of people try to disprove his theory. When he first prognosticated that would be the case, a lot of people disagree with him, you know, mm-hmm. but, and, you know, we're still going back into the 70s, right? So we're not in the 80s or 90s where we have more, you know, data that we're collecting, but we're just looking at usage stats, which what he was doing, you know, based on what he was seeing from coming from Intel and other transistor makers, that they were growing exponentially. So that was really a good argument. And the way it applies today is some of the most common things. So if we move away from simply a transistor to a cell phone. Mm-hmm. So the cell phone providers suggested every 2 years, and they'd like it to be every year, you get a new phone. Why? Well, the transistor piece was they were improving the technology, making it faster, better, moving technology to the next dimension. But everything has gone to the point where replacement in a cycle of every 2 years is what the manufacturer would like. Now, like if you work for an institution like a university or a corporation, you know, you look at how often somebody gets a new computer. So usually it's between 4 and 5 years, you know, every 5 years. The problem is that those that seek to harm us, that technology may or may not be up to speed with what's coming behind it, right? So it's so easy for, like, if you have an iPhone and we all know about the updates. And that was another piece of that I really wanted to talk about. Like, so how often should you update your computer, right? And if you follow manufacturers, like say Firefox, like I think Firefox has a new update every day. If not every day, it's pretty frequent.
It's very often.
Very often, right? So there's a new update every day. Your cell phone operating system has an update. Your computer operating system, all these things have updates. And the question is why? And if you apply Moore's law to these things, every so period of time, a change comes that requires us to make another change. So for example, you've got a brand new iPhone 12, just got it out of the box, turned it on, ran all the updates, put all your stuff in there, and wham, here comes the iPhone XXX. Why? And the problem is, I think in Moore's case, he was really thinking of a theory of improving technology and technology productivity. Whereas I think in a lot of cases, manufacturers, it's more about selling product. And on the other side, it's about correcting the flaws that have been created in the software that's been installed on these things. So, you know, if you look at how often there's an iOS update or how often there's a Windows update or whatever it is, it's because the vendors are trying to make sure that the software is up to date and can fight against whatever's coming added.
Oh yeah.
The problem is if the hardware and the software isn't in sync, sometimes those preventative measures do not always work. So for example, if you have a Windows computer from say 2005 and mm-hmm. you're still running the updates, still taking updates and all that stuff, it may be working perfectly fine in terms of the specifications of whatever that operating system is and whatever those updates are. But then in reality, the machine itself may not be able to handle all the things that the new software brings in the next upgrade.
Oh yeah, absolutely. That was one of the things that turned me on to Linux when I was first getting started in my career, was that most of, like, if I had a computer that was like a personal computer, it was very likely an older computer, right? Because I was, you know, straight out of college, you know, didn't make much money. I pretty much used leftovers for everything. And when I was primarily a Windows user, every Windows update gets more secure, but it's going to make that computer slower as compared to every Linux update, which I won't say this is still the case because I think they've gotten a bit away from it. But at the time, pretty much every Linux update would make things faster, even older hardware. I think that's maybe switched around a little bit now, and now every major Linux update is probably going to not be as good on older hardware. But back in the day, 15, 20 years ago, every new Linux release was like, oh yeah, my old box is going to be twice as fast now. It's going to be great. And, like, personally speaking, as far as like OS upgrades and phone upgrades go, as soon as that box pops up that says, hey, you have an update, I click that thing. Cause, like, usually that thing means, usually when you see an OS X update, or, you know, in my case, an Android update, and generally it means like there's an exploit out that is just waiting to jump onto your computer. And, like, that's the last thing I want. I know eventually it's going to happen. Like, you know, it's always going to happen, but I usually don't mind saying, okay, I am going to be away from my computer for the next half hour or 45 minutes while this upgrade pushes through, because I don't want to be the person that's like, oh, you should have put that upgrade on 2 days ago. You know, it's sorry.
Yeah. And I think that the way I grew up in IT, you did not respond to the first iteration. So we waited to the .1 or the .2 or whatever the dot integration is. So if the iOS is 10.12, you know, you wait for the .1, .2, or .3, not assume, because usually the company had not worked out all of the bugs, which make you susceptible to other kinds of problems. But I absolutely agree, as soon as that update comes out, because it's a different world now. You know, if you look back at where we were just simply 5 years ago, you know, our vulnerabilities were high, right? So we knew what spam and phishing and ransomware wasn't so much the thing. You know, there were these terrible viruses. You know, we'd hear about these bot viruses that could go all the way down to root and just tear up your life. You know, we were worried about those things, but they weren't of monumental importance. But today, and I shouldn't say that, they were important. They just weren't as important as they are today, like with applying updates, because as we saw with the pipeline cyber attack, I'm sure you saw in the news yesterday, the meat community has been attacked. You know, all this ransomware. And the problem is the people that are maintaining these computer systems have amazing challenges in front of them. They're not just fighting the day to day. I mean, you've got to think out a long time ago. You've got to think what could possibly happen. And so back in the day, you had the black swan, the white swan, and you had all these kind of hypothetical theories of what could happen and how you could retaliate. Well, now, or not retaliate, remediate. But now you have this point where it's hard to even know what's coming at you, you know? So the minimum work you can do is update your device when the manufacturer releases an update. That's the minimum you could do. The second part of it is to, you know, make sure that you have if you're using Wi-Fi or internet, to secure that environment, because these people are gunning for either money, you know, power, or, you know, credentials just to say, I can do it. So you as a citizen, you as an everyday person are up against it. And you as an organization or a school or something are up against it. The problem is they haven't found a way to take what vulnerabilities you have and exploit it against you. So, you know, if they were to hack, say me, I'm just one person, you know, they may get $2 or $3, but that would be pretty frustrating to them. But if they were to hack, say, Bill Gates or Jeff Bezos, wow, just think of how much they would get and what would happen, right? So, you know, people need to be very proactive in applying Moore's Law to the fact that there is going to be a change more often than every 2 years. It's probably going to be more like every 2 months or something even different than that, but there's going to be a change and you need to be prepared for it.
Yeah, absolutely. And that always reminds me of the, I guess the adage that, like, attackers are always getting better. Like, right now they're as bad as they're ever going to be. Like, tomorrow they're going to be worse. Right. Day after that, or worse. they're going to be better. They're going to learn more attacks. Like, their old attacks aren't going away. They're just learning new ones, and they're learning how to perfect those new ones. Sort of like with the ransomware. I mean, ransomware is like very elegant. Like, it uses cryptography to impossibly, or, you know, their goal is to impossibly encrypt your entire system until you give them money that is theoretically not traceable through Bitcoin, and then they get that money, and then they either decrypt or don't decrypt all of your data. Like, that's much, you know, you can make a lot more money doing that than mining cryptocurrency or defacing a website, or, you know, just putting, I don't know if people still put, like, you know, I guess it would count under defacement, just putting like prank things on a website that's, you know, the attacker may find funny, but they're not going to actually make any money of it out of it. Now it's like, hey, I've got all your data until you pay me. And it's all anonymous. And it's going to be very hard for the police to catch me like this. So that part is very scary, especially the fact that, you know, that's where we are now. And they're just going to get better at it with new methods, you know, continuing.
And when it happens, not so right now, we believe is happening from state and national actors in other countries and other places. But, you know, what happens when it's here, when it's homegrown, right? When mm-hmm. we figure out how to do it to ourselves. So the haves and the have nots, the smarts and the smart nots will eventually advance and be able to do this, you know, so that there's a lot to be said about that. And I think the interesting piece about all of this is, like, what we haven't done a good job, and I say we in the IT community, is exposing the whole community, not just the people in IT, to things like the dark web. You know, like, it exists. You know, people need to know that that thing exists and what it allows people to do. So you can literally disappear in this dark web, you know, create as many identities as you want to, you know, to do this. So, you know, the problems that we have in the world are broad and dense. And then to add technology to it, which is the game changer of ever, you know, I mean, if you think of the car or, you know, electricity, they are amazing things, and they are really, they shape, reshaped our world. But think about technology, you know, and we talk about this, you know, laughingly, but, you know, that you can call your house and tell it to do something. I mean, I didn't say call your husband or your wife or your child. You hunt lights on. It's 10 o'clock. Secure the house. We have eggs in the refrigerator. And the Internet of Things has really opened up this path to vulnerability greater than anything else. Because I do think that the government is working on regulations for IoTs. I keep hearing that. But the point of regulations is just, how do you know where this data is going, who's getting it, and what are they doing with it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And making it secure as well. Like, I always hear about, I guess the big thing I hear about is like baby monitors. Like, oh, somebody was like saying creepy thing. I walked into my child's bedroom and someone was saying like creepy things through the baby monitor because it was on an insecure, you know, right. network. And it's like, ooh, like, I do not like that. That seems incredibly creepy.
And the problem is the way it's marketed to you. You are a Joe consumer. You turn on your TV and there is Amazon telling you about Alexa. Mm-hmm. Get it. Go get Alexa. And all of us think it's great, right? You can lock your car, play music. It's great, great convenience. The problem is they don't explain to you what that really means and your vulnerability by having things like that. So as you said, putting it on a secure network, that's the very first thing you could do to try to protect yourself. But the problem is the thing that's collecting that data off of IoTs is not going to a data center, or it's not going to Amazon. It's going to the cloud somewhere. And, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And the other scary thing with the Alexa is, like, I guess it's not scary, but it seems very skeezy, is they have this like sidewalk thing now where it will share like part of your network with other Amazon users just like walking by the house. Yep. And like part of me thinks like, you know, if my neighbor needs some internet here and there, I don't mind. And the other part of me thinks like, ooh, what is that neighbor going to be doing? And like, now that goes through, you know, my like private internet, like I do not like that. That part seems incredibly gross.
Right. I remember when Alexa first came out, somebody gave me the original one. I got a Dot. I mean, I've got about five. They have never been taken out of the box. You know, the only Internet of Things I have is just my doorbell. And I put my doorbell on my network. I didn't allow it to go through the typical Wi-Fi. I put it in a different way. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's nothing you get. If you want to look in my doorbell, Are you just going to see the people who pass in front of my house and the creatures in the yard at night? But you know, I have no IoT things because I do not want to do that. I do not use my phone on Wi-Fi, even at home. I don't have my computer on Wi-Fi. Everything I have is on internet behind a secured network. And I have nothing. I mean, you know, if somebody would have hacked me, they'd be pissed as hell. Like, what the hell happened here? But, you know, people need to be educated as to what these things mean. And I charge the technology people and the manufacturing technology companies with that because you don't do a good job of educating. And I think you and I had talked about this before when we had the Equifax breach. You know, so all of a sudden Equifax came out and said, well, we can freeze your credit. We can do some credit monitoring. What does that mean? And that's what I think is missing in all of these conversations is the education of the everyday consumer.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. When you mentioned the dark web, that made me sort of think about how, like, I think a lot of people think the internet is anonymous or semi-anonymous or that they can be anonymous. But in general, like the internet is not anonymous. Like everything you do can be tracked pretty much like to your house. And the exception to that is, I guess we can call it like the dark web or the Tor network or these onion sites where it's a cryptographically secure bouncing through multiple hops to abstract your, you know, both your origin and what you're looking at. And I think that's where a lot of these sites pop up. Like that was where the Silk Road was, where you could buy like drugs and stuff on the internet. And even though that was, you know, cryptographically secure on the Onion, I think they found that through like a JavaScript plugin the dude had installed on there that somehow exposed his real IP, and they found it, and that's all they needed. And now the dude is in jail. He sounded like sort of a nasty dude anyway. I think he was also like hiring people to murder other people. So
I remember that. I do remember that. Yeah, that was right. A paid assassin, a hitman, a paid hitman.
Yeah.
Something
yeah.
like that.
I yeah. think I remember that. So while I do like an anonymity, I also don't like when people are like hiring to get other people killed. That doesn't seem quite in the spirit of a free internet.
Yes. And I think the interesting thing, so we go back to Moore's law. So I think that one of the interesting pieces about Moore's law, if you think about technology, then it was pretty innocent. It wasn't as complex and dense as it is now. It was pretty innocent. And we were all excited about it. So if you remember, I don't know if you watch any of the Steve Jobs stories, the story of his life. So you look at these computers that people are bringing in, that first IBM PC, you know, these things are massive, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 pounds. You know, and all this stuff. And then Apple comes up with this little blue Macintosh thing, little translucent screen Macintosh thing. And that was cute. Now it's really convenient. But I think that that was the really advancing Moore's law, because people were getting smarter about technology and learning to know more. You know, when we think about, I don't know how many of you are all enough to know this, but how many of you heard of Netscape? You know, Netscape. Yeah. When we first heard Netscape, we have our browser, we can get to the internet. But that too was naive. It was very, very naive. You could do some things, you know, it was somewhat proprietary, you know, and these things, you know, what Moore's law said is that this technology will double every 2 years based on some theory of practice. But in reality, what he really was describing is that technology is going to advance faster than you can keep up with. It's only this little part, I'm going to tell you my theory of why this is going to happen. What those who argued against him or believed his theory was not correct did not assume was how you apply that to every bit, not just the transistor, but to the microchip that's sitting on the motherboard that makes the computer work, right? So if you remember, and I'm sure you were a bit younger than, but if you remember, the microchip used to be this, I would say probably it was about maybe 2 inch by 2 inch, or, you know, it wasn't a little teeny weeny little dot thing like it is today. I mean, it used to be a massive little thing. You know, you pull out the motherboard, you find out where the sound is, you find out where, and you could just fix it and replace it yourself. I think it was in 2015 or 17, Apple prevented you from updating memory or pulling out the motherboard without invalidating the warranty.
Oh, yeah. Yes. I think they had like some of those things like soldered in there. So it was like really hard to do.
Right. But it was amazing to see that progression. And I think that where we are now is we should apply Moore's law and generally to everything is going to grow that way, including the bad guys. The bad guys are going to grow. I think, as you said, some of them start off pretty bad at coding and hacking and all of this stuff. But over time, you get better because the more you do it, the better you become.
Yeah, yeah, no, I 100% agree with that. And I would add to that, even like the good technology, like the good technology is also increasing exponentially. And like, if you're in the IT field, like you have to keep up with that. Like you can't just say, oh, hold on, everybody, technology going too fast. Like, let's pause that for a couple of years while I, you know, take my time and learn this thing. It's like, it's going, like you got to hold on to that train, because it doesn't care if you're not ready for it. Like, it's just gonna expand. And that sort of makes being in IT like a constant, you've got to just constantly be learning and reading and picking up new things, because it's not going to pause for you. Like, it doesn't care.
Absolutely. And I think that if you take, you know, where we are now with, I guess, what many people would call cutting edge, the cloud. I remember the first time I heard of the cloud, you know, and at the time, you know, you had a very, very vague sense, you know, that this is going to move this technology to unknown locations with unknown people managing, doing whatever they're doing for you. So you don't have these huge overhead costs. But even that now, so who's not in the cloud business now? So you, Amazon started off, they hit the ball out the park. Right behind them came Microsoft, then came Google, then there's IBM, and there are a gazillion others now. It requires the technician and the leadership of that technology team to be fully adverse, but be prepared to be absolutely wrong and vulnerable. You can't hire enough smart people to outthink what's possibly out there. You can't hire enough smart people to prepare for the next level, right? So there is enough work that has to be done in this field that I think it's almost incumbent upon us to be prepared for it to be not what we think it is. So if you think that the cloud as it is in its current permeation is going to be, no, I think the cloud is going to evolve to something else, you know, so it'll still be somewhere unknown in some unknown location and all that stuff, but it will be a different kind of cloud, right?
Yeah.
So it'll be a different thing.
Absolutely. And it's sort of being like, I mean, my background is sort of traditional sysadmin, like working like on things in a data center that, like, you know, on boxes that a company paid for that we are putting an operating system down on. And it was hard for me to get acclimated to the, I guess, the cloud world or whatever. And then, cause I was always like, oh, well, that's going to be like super expensive. You know, you're going to have all the same problems, but it's going to cost more and you're not going to have as much control. And then when you start using it, it's like, oh, well, this is actually like really nice. Like, and it takes a lot of the old pain away of having to run your own hardware, which I don't know anybody that wants to run their own hardware. Running your own hardware is like a real pain because hardware fails all the time. And, you know, being able to use something in the cloud that is redundant and redundant in a way that you don't even really have to think about it. You just sort of have to follow best practices and do the right thing. That's a huge advantage as far as, you know, keeping sites up and keeping services running. So I love the cloud nowadays. It took me a little while to get there, but it's great.
Absolutely. I just think that what we see in the cloud now is going to evolve, because if you can imagine the resources that Google and IBM and all those others are going to throw at it, it's going to evolve to something even much more scalable than it is now, right? So, you know, you could pay pennies on the dollars to Amazon for putting your data or your company in the cloud, attaching the appropriate security to it. But eventually it's going to get to the point where it's going to auto divine that for yourself. So you as the sysadmin or the person who is designing that cloud service will find out that there'll be an algorithm and you put in some criteria. So I have user data, social security numbers, you know, things like that. And some algorithm will go out there and find, well, the best cloud for you is over here. And this is what you need to do. The problem just is following the path, right? So how do you start from the time that you start thinking about this, think about what the bad guys are doing and thinking about how do you keep your institution functional and doing it so as best you can physically, right? So you got two pieces that are always competing with each other in IT. So keeping things working and doing so without spending all the money. And then what are the new emerging technologies out there? You know, if you would have asked us, you know, about biometrics about 5-6 years ago, maybe a little bit longer ago, we would have said what we do now with our phone for two-factor authentication would not have been biometrics. We would not be using our face, right?
Yeah.
But there we are. you know, and what's next, you know, on my Apple computer, whenever I log in, it says, put your finger here so we can confirm who you are. I'm like, I don't know you like that. Why don't I put my finger? but that's where it is. And just imagine where it goes. So when you think about the next level criminal, if it's an eye scan, a finger scan, a face scan, those things become susceptible to someone stealing them, right? Somebody might cut your finger off and cut the skin off and glue it on their finger. So any one of these things could happen. And we need to be thinking about how that affects us in the world. And just to say one more thing about that, you know, so money, so we still count on currency, you know, in ways of doing business. I mean, the vulnerability of currency is the same vulnerability of IT security, right? So somebody can steal it. Someone can hijack it from you. Typically, when someone steals your currency, they're not going to ransomware you to get it back. You're just out of it, right?
Yeah, that's valuable to them. They can just keep it.
They just keep that, right? But just think about all the technologies that will allow us to get to another kind of currency where it is not necessarily, you know, something that we see, like sort of like Bitcoin. But people are mining Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies all the time. You know, there are all these companies that are, and most of them are outside of the United States, which means we're sending our information out of the United States. Only God knows what that means. It's just a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So the one other thing I wanted to ask you about was the phone upgrades every 2 years. Do you upgrade your phone every 2 years or get like a new hardware model?
I do not. I usually get a new phone. Let me tell you my Apple store. So I have an iPhone. Uh-huh. Every time Apple sends a vulnerability update, what it does is it deletes anybody who has a phone that's not an iPhone. I hate that.
Yes.
Because people have other kinds of phones. So I'm in the phone. I'm looking. Let me find Drew. There's no Drew in your phone. What do you mean there's no Drew? So what I started doing is I started dumping my contacts out of my phone and putting them in an Excel spreadsheet so that when I couldn't find somebody who I've been calling for years, yeah, you know, that has now gone away.
Yeah. Okay,
this is why I do that. So I understand the desire to get a phone every 2 years. Maybe this might stop the problem from happening, but this is one of the nightmares of an iPhone is losing your non-Apple contacts.
Yeah. That really sucks. I'm an Android user, so I don't have to worry about that. But, when I first was using these like smartphones, every 2 years seemed like forever. And like every phone was a huge jump. But like for our last few generations, like, I don't know that I could really even tell like a difference in the last few. Like besides battery life seems to get a little bit better with every jump. But besides that, it's sort of like, but I'm still like, I guess it's that fear of missing out. Cause every 2 years I want to get that new phone. Cause I'm like, oh, I've had this phone for 2 years. Like it's time to get another one. What am I missing out on? And you know, the answer is probably not much, but as a ultra consumer, I guess I just want to do it.
My son doesn't wait 2 years. He gets one every year and then a new computer every 2 years. And it's only because his mother is poor. I have to keep reminding him we can't buy one of that every day, especially a MacBook Pro, because go buy an HP versus a MacBook Pro. Yeah, not something you can do often. But you know, again, I think that goes back to educating consumers, right? How do you educate consumers about what's the right thing to do? Because it's like, you know, everything that, you know, and I tell my husband and my family this all the time. If you watch TV and look at these commercials, so I'll pick on my favorite is medications. Mm-hmm. So somebody will come on a commercial and says, you know, shingles doesn't care. Okay. You know, I eat a blueberries every day. Shingles doesn't care. And then they tell you, go tell your doctor to give you a prescription for shingles because it could attack at any moment. And then they get to reading the side effects or what could happen from taking the medication. And one of the things in a good 7-8, you could die.
Yeah.
So you could tell me the shingles, which I assume shingles cause people to itch. I don't know what shingles does, but the shingles, just, I could live with shingles, but I could die from taking the medicine to help me get over shingles.
Oh, yeah.
It's just, yeah. It's the commercials either assume humans are stupid as dirt. I mean, we just really have no brains because we're going to just run to our doctor and say, hey, I think I might get shingles. Can I have a vaccine for it? Or can I have it? Okay. The commercials that they have for food, for all kinds of other products. So, and I think you and I talked about this before. So one of these chicken companies have an amazing commercial. The chicken, little chicken, crunchy chicken thing looks so good. Oh my God, Drew, it just looks so stupid, Rochelle. I get up and go get one. Uh-huh. Mine doesn't look like that. You're like, what happened here? You know, like, okay. I get it. And so the clothes I buy, you turn on, click on the TV, it has an ad, you need to buy this coat, you know, get this coat. It doesn't look like that. It doesn't work like that. So everything that they sell to us, they sell to us for a reason. And I want to tell you my next thing I need you to go watch.
Uh-huh.
There's a Netflix program called Dirty Money.
Oh, yeah. I've watched that.
Oh, my God. Have you watched all the episodes?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I mean, it's truly amazing. So the payday was the best one yet out of all of them I watched. Oh, my God. I watched that twice.
Yeah.
So you called up the payday lending company. You say, hey, I want to borrow $300. I can't pay my light bill. They give me the $300. You pay the money that they tell you you need to pay each month to pay this debt back. And you're only paying for the service fee. You're not paying. So your debt is exponentially growing. It's like, we are consumers, and the people don't think they've done anything wrong. I mean, as a society, we are not educated enough for these services to come online and take advantage of us. We are not. And everything in our lives, you know, going back to Moore, you know, everything in our lives is going to change. Is it going to change in 2 years, 6 months, 6 years, whatever, it's going to change. That change needs you to have some kind of educating process to it, as opposed to a commercial. So you've got beer, which won't give you any calories. You got water, it tastes like something another, until you try it, right? But you don't never see the commercials when people try it and say, you know, whatever it is, or you have a celebrity suggesting you get something, and they always show it in their hand or so, but you don't ever see them put it in their mouth or put it on their skin or whatever it is. It's like that, just trickery.
Yep.
And as long as that trickery happens, and you don't educate the consumers, you're going to have some consumers where it looks like we don't really give a high end help about them, because we aren't preparing them for what we're selling them. And we're always selling them something. 24 hours a day, we're selling you something.
Yeah, absolutely. And as a drinker of beer, I was very against the no calorie beers for a while because they were disgusting. And then I recently had one. Yeah. I recently had one. It was delicious. It was like one of the best drinks I've ever tasted. And I was like, oh, this is like a bad sign if they can make these things be so good. Because I would say for the most part, they're still really gross. But every now and then somebody makes one. And it's like, actually has flavor and I enjoy it.
Absolutely. But the same thing is true for diet sodas and all that stuff. You remember how bad diet sodas used to taste for a long time? And I don't know if Dr. Pepper has a commercial now. They claim that their Dr. Pepper tastes just like the regular thing. Okay. What? It tastes like the regular one? why do I want this one? Oh, this one has no sugar or has, okay.
Yeah.
And it's like, we are constantly being fooled. And I'll tell you one last thing about that. And I'm going to stop soapboxing, but plastic, right? Mm-hmm. So what do we know about plastic? Well, we know we use it incessantly. You know, we all learn the styrofoam thing, right? So we try to stay away from styrofoam as much as we can. But plastics is sitting right beside it. And it is literally deadly. It has carcinogenics in it. It's just deadly. So when you stick it in a microwave or you use it in some kind of way, you're introducing that in your body.
Oh, yeah. And don't burn it for sure.
Right. And don't go to the company who gave you this plastic and sue them, because you can't prove what gave you the cancer, because it could be that shingle shot you went and asked the doctor for, or it could be the air you're breathing, or it could be the TV you're staring at, whatever it is. There's no way to identify what it is. And what was really interesting about the story about plastics is that it's now in our bodies. It's part of our system, our physical structure, cell structure.
Yeah. Really? Yeah.
And that's Moore's law. Everything is Moore's law. It's getting to be more, bigger, better, faster, whatever it is, but it's also at the same time destroying people along the way and destroying things along the way.
Yeah. Thank you for listening to Eminent Teachnology. If you like the show, please review, subscribe, and recommend us to your friends and family. We'd love to hear feedback from you as well. You can email us at eminentteachnology@gmail.com. See y'all soon.